about some high-stakes solitude. That's what Sarah Marquis was looking for when she set out to walk 10,000 miles from Siberia to Australia alone. It took her 3 years. She survived brutal winters, sub-zero temperatures, blinding sandstorms, drunken nomads, and dangerous drug dealers. But she made it, alone, on foot, with nothing but a cart and a backpack. Steve Paulson talked with her.
Sarah, you did this amazing feat of endurance that few other people would even dream of trying to do, a three-year, 10,000-mile walk that stretched from Siberia to Australia. What did you hope to discover during this journey?
Well, I think it was more like a dream than I wanted to achieve, you know. I wanted to see where my feet can go and where my feet can take me. And I've been doing this for the last 23 years.
Now, it's worth pointing out that in many of these countries you were walking through, it's practically unheard of for a woman to be walking alone, let alone a Swiss woman carrying thousands of dollars worth of gear, of supplies and equipment. Did you feel like you were a walking target as you were on this huge trek?
Yeah. Well, it's been a bit of a journey, I would say, because I had trouble in Mongolia, for instance, where I've been attacked every night for 2 months in my camp. You know, just before the night starts to fall, then they will arrive at my camp drunk on their horse. And
so these nomadic riders in Mongolia would come, you said, every night? And what?
Yeah, for 2 months.
How did you fend them off?
Well, they're really scary because, first of all, they are drunk. That was the problem. So you just have to do the unexpected. Sometimes I will actually surprise them and cry really loudly to the horse, and the horse will rise, you know, on the back feet,
mm-hmm.
and they will make a destabilization on the guy on the horse.
You try to scare the horse to throw the riders off.
Yeah, because you can't scare a drunk Mongolian guy. You can scare his horse, yeah, but not him.
It's just amazing to hear you describe this. I mean, you must have always had to be thinking on your feet, you know, probably sort of planning possible escape routes, you know, just to defend off these people who could really create major problems for you.
Yeah, and after 2 months, I decide I need a plan B, definitely. I can't go on like that because I was not sleeping at night, see. So I find a way because I've been hiding under the road. You know, under the road, you've got those big concrete tubes.
Mm-hmm. Like culverts.
Yeah, exactly. So I was sleeping under the culverts at night. So nobody never came under those roads to look what was going on underneath there.
And you had a tent with you. I mean, you could camp out wherever.
Yeah. I can, whatever. I sleep like a baby normally when Mongol man on a horse don't come to disturb me.
What did you do about food?
Well, food, I've been carrying my food, but most of the time it was difficult to do any resupply because Mongolian man and woman and the family over there, they eat meat. And I don't eat meat.
Oh, you're a vegetarian.
Yeah. And so the thing is, I've been eating a type of biscuits, really, really dense biscuits, like a cookie, big, massive cookie. And that biscuit saved my life all the way because I had tea and my biscuits and that made me happy. I had a full tummy. That's all I wanted.
Wait, just talking about your time in Mongolia in particular, were there especially scary moments when you really wondered whether you were going to survive?
Oh, yeah, those moments were there. And but, you know, you switch. You go from, oh, I'm going to be careful here, to surviving mode.
Yeah, tell me about one or two of those instances.
Well, for instance, in a jungle in Laos, I had the dengue fever. So it's really high fever. And you go through a stage of really, we call that delirium fever.
Mm-hmm. Delirium.
Yeah. And then after 3 days, I survived. So I attached myself in a tree because I knew I was near a river and I knew that I could actually get to some really high fever where you don't really know what you're doing and what you will normally do. You will jump in the water to get cooler. And to avoid this, so I attached myself like a dog nearly to a tree to make sure that I was all right, you know.
Wow.
So then after that, I decided to just took off again through the jungle. And then after a week, I find this perfect spot near a little pond of water, clear water. So that night I was tired and exhausted, and I thought, oh, this is the perfect spot. I don't have to clear anything to put my tent. I'm going to sleep there. And in the middle of the night, I hear some voices coming through, and I wake up, and here they are, 15 men, really tiny little men. So those tiny little men, sweating men with a headlamp, just tried to pull me out of the tent. And I thought, you know what? Those little cheeky men, they're little men. I'm going to stand up. That's it. And I'm going to yell at them, you know, like, I want to sleep. You know, I was cranky. I want to sleep. And I stand up and I yell at them. And suddenly I hear in the air this gunshot going on. Like, they had an automatic gun and they let the shot get out. And I was like, holy shit. I'm not in a good position here. I must change what I'm doing. That's not working.
So what did you do then?
So it's a long story, goes on for 3 hours. But to make it short, I realized they were drug dealers. And they were moving drugs quietly at night and drinking water from where I was. And I took this little diary that I had with me. I wrote some phrase from different type of tribe who lives in the jungle there. And I took the tribe's name where I was, and I had this three phrase writing in it who say, I'm from Switzerland. My name is Sarah. Do you understand me? And I've been saying this phrase really slowly over and over, like a mantra, you know, to calm down everybody, with the same voice, the same level of quietness, and lower down my energy and keep calm. And 3 hours later, they start to walk off, and I was alive.
So were the people that you met, or at least some of the people, did they pose the bigger threat than just having to deal with nature, with the harsh environmental conditions you were running into?
Yeah, the biggest fear for me was actually human, never been nature. I had those amazing encounters with nature. I've never been frightened by nature. Unfortunately, human has been another story for me there.
Yeah. Now, you spent most of these 3 years alone. I mean, on these long walks. I mean, sometimes going yeah. for days at a time without seeing anyone.
Yeah.
Did you get lonely?
Well, this is a process, see. So for the first 6 months, I've been like through really difficult time with my body and my mind. It's like being in a wash machine where you're just tumbling in inside. And so months goes, and then suddenly one morning, you wake up and there is not you, your body, your pain, and your tent and the Gobi Desert. There is one thing out there only. It's like a little ice cube who actually melt, and you're part of everything around you. So loneliness, it's not part of that plan. So you become the sand, you become the wind, you become so close to every living things around you. And it's this incredible feeling that makes me believe that we all got this same thing. And most important, it is, and we all got the same address. It's the planet Earth.
So finally, you ended your journey in Australia. Were you a different person by the time you got to the end? Did this change you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Can you explain that? How were you different?
I think I get lighter.
When you say lighter, not taking things quite so seriously? What do you
exactly.
mean?
Huh? Something like that. You know, we are not serious in the right spot. You know, we're not serious enough for serious question, and we are serious for little thing. You know, and I think little thing doesn't matter, doesn't change the course of your life. That's what I mean by lighter. I mean, taking things more like they're coming to you and dealing with it, but in a good way and with a lighter spirit and more wisdom, you know. The wind in Mongolia teach me a lot about the wisdom of the wind.
So once you got back home, once you got back to Switzerland, mm-hmm. did it feel kind of boring to be back in the modern civilized world?
Oh, no. I enjoy every bit of it, you know. First of all, you open the fridge and there is food inside. I like this concept of having food at hand, you know. It's quite cool. And everything is there. But it needs a little bit of adjustment, see. Adjustment regarding my senses. Because by the time I come back home, my hearing system will be really able to capture noise from every corner of my surrounding. So going back to a coffee shop, for example, is quite complicated.
It's really loud, I guess.
You can hear everything, yeah. And you can hear the washing machine in the background. You can hear the kids screaming on the left corner. You can hear the chair moving on the floor, you know. So all my senses are quite high developed.
Most of these stories that I hear, I'm just wondering, why do you do this? I mean, you are risking death, obviously. You are constantly on high alert, incredibly difficult circumstances. You're dealing with all kinds of stress. I mean, is it worth it?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's a physical journey at the beginning, and it's become really quickly amazing, incredible inner journey where you test yourself because by doing this, you're acting outside of your comfort zone most of the time. And if you don't get out of that comfort zone, you will not experience superior level of your capacity because we all can do so much, but we don't test ourselves. And by doing that, you discover that there is so much out there. And out there, it's actually inside you most of the time.
Adventurer Sarah Marquis talking with Steve Paulson. Sarah's memoir is called Wild by Nature, From Siberia to Australia, 3 years alone in the wilderness on foot. You'll also find videos of her walk on our website at ttbook.org.